From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Once again, joining you from the Fleet Center in downtown Boston in the Democratic National Convention. This is day three of the big gathering of the Democratic faithful that wraps up tomorrow night with John Kerry's formal acceptance of his party's nomination. Last night, rookie rising star Chicago's Barack Obama wowed the crowd here, and First Lady hopeful Teresa Hines Kerry put a gracious end to any doubt that she is a woman who will speak her mind. Tonight, delegates will hear from another bright star, Vice Presidential candidate John Edwards. We will be tracking all the action in the convention hall. Plus, looking at the Democrats and Iraq with Senator Robert Byrd, Congressman Henry Waxman of California, the Kerry campaign's senior foreign policy advisor, Susan Rice, and you. If the Democrats inherit the war in Iraq, what will they do with it? Is John Kerry right to say he wasn't wrong in voting a green light for the war? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's turn for just a moment to WBUR reporter Audie Cornish, who's been on the floor of the convention hall and among delegates all day today. Audie Cornish, what's on delegates' mind? I guess we're talking about Iraq tonight, in particular around issues of national security. Are they hearing what they want to hear, enough of what they want to hear?
Well, they have said that they understand that it's not about laying out details. Some of the delegates that I talked to today said, you know, it's not here to get finite points of policy, but the idea is to have a president who's going to have a complete and totally different approach. And they want tonight to be a night where the Kerry-Edwards ticket can explain to the country, this is how our approach will be fundamentally different. And if you want that in a ticket, then this is the vote for you. Also, some people said that they didn't want to, the party shouldn't tread on imagery of 9/11 and sort of exploiting issues and exploiting the fear some people have about terrorism. And so there, people are thinking that they're talking about it just right. They're getting just the amount of information that they're looking
so
for.
So they don't want 9/11 imagery or references, but they do want more explicit national security conversation.
Well, I think that the delegates here think that the Republicans are exploiting that imagery and exploiting that fear, and some of the people I talked to on the floor, you know, accuse the administration of exploiting that fear in its policymaking since the September 11th attacks. And so what they're hoping is for a 1-2 punch from the Kerry Edwards campaign. You've got Edwards' message of hopefulness and optimism and bringing people together, and then you've got Kerry coming in with all the great foreign policy knowledge and experience, and they're hoping that that combination is really going to push the ticket forward.
And what about John Edwards' speech tonight? He's been nursing a cold, we understand. He canceled a couple of appearances to try and rest that voice. He's stepping into some pretty big shoes tonight. Bill Clinton and Barack Obama have both done, by almost all accounts, pretty extraordinary jobs on their nights at bat. What are people expecting from John Edwards tonight?
Well, they're expecting good things because a lot of these people may have seen him out on the primary trail when everyone talked about what a great speaker he was and how he really understood how to charm a crowd. And they're anticipating more of that tonight. We also had people saying that they're really looking forward to him bringing a kind of hopefulness and optimism for cynical voters, to draw independent voters or to draw maybe disaffected Democrats who came out of primary season feeling like they didn't get what they wanted. And so they're looking for him to do the inviting tonight in his speech.
Looking for John Edwards to build that bridge. Audie Cornish, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
We are talking tonight as we keep an eye on the convention hall floor, and we will be visiting there often, talking about the Democrats and Iraq, where they stand, what they'll do. Earlier today, I spoke with West Virginia Senator Robert Byrd, a Democratic legend on Capitol Hill, and perhaps the most outspoken critic of the Bush administration's war in Iraq. I asked him why the United States is in Iraq.
It was misled by this administration. An administration, in large part, in the White House, super hawks that came from the days of Nixon, which was also secretive, who also didn't trust the American people, didn't trust the Congress, took advantage and sought to be so secretive and abused its powers. This administration has done the same thing. That's why we're in Iraq. I was with the president 100% when he responded to the attack on the World Trade Center. That was al-Qaeda working from Afghanistan. I was with him then. But then when he moved and used that to mislead the American people, and by say he, I mean his administration, the Super Hawks. This is a dangerous administration, and it has circumvented the Constitution of the United States. That's what makes me so bitter about the policies of this administration.
The president has said and continues to say that Americans are safer today because the United States is attacking terrorists over there in Iraq.
Well, he and his policies have made Iraq a haven for terrorists. It was not a haven for terrorists before this administration drew us into Iraq. I'm not so sure we're safer. I'm thinking about the cuts, the wounds that have been suffered by the Constitution as a result of this administration's domineering policies. Let me tell you why I'm afraid of this administration. Let me use the president's own words.
All right.
Let me tell you. These are the words of George Bush. And you read them on page 170 of my book, Losing America. Here it is. I'm the commander. See? I don't need to explain. I do not need to explain why I say things. That's the interesting thing about being the president. Maybe somebody needs to explain to me why they say something, but I don't feel like I owe anybody an explanation. Now, there's a man who talks above the people.
What is at stake in your mind in the way the relationship between the executive and the Congress and the people has been played out in this presidency?
This administration has only disdain for the people through their elected representatives in Congress. People's branch. This administration has turned the back of its hand on the UN, on other nations. It has turned the back of its hands on our friends and has referred to them as old Europe. The world sees us no longer as a giant peacemaker, but only as a giant troublemaker.
You say that you fear Iraq has become a quagmire, that we have to have an exit strategy. What do you want to hear from John Kerry and the Democratic Party on Iraq policy?
I want us to work with our friends in the world. Get back to being on the same level as our friends, not above them. This administration turned its back on the UN. It turned its back on our friends. It referred to them as old Europe. That was contempt. The same kind of contempt that we in the Congress have felt from this administration.
But you're calling for an exit strategy from Iraq. You know many Democrats would like practically to set a time limit on the American presence there. Do you hear John Kerry describing an effective exit strategy?
He will bring our people home with honor. He will work with other nations to do that. I believe that. I've talked with him along those lines. I have faith in him. I served with him. We've got to have a change. We have to have a new face in order to bring a breath of fresh air into the world community. The people of the world are not going to believe this government. It has misled them as it has misled us, and it has shown contempt for them as it has shown to the people's representatives.
But a multilateral approach in Iraq seems to be John Kerry's core position on that conflict. Is that necessarily going to bring an exit strategy? We've seen the United Nations, even the Europeans and NATO, quail before challenges like this. It took them a long time to get into the Balkans. We saw what happened in Rwanda. What makes you think that Kerry's announced policy of staying the course but doing it multilaterally will be more effective in getting American troops out of Iraq?
He will work with the Congress of the United States, and he and the people's representatives will guide us in the direction we need to know. Bring our people home with honor.
You voted against the resolution that gave President Bush permission to go to Iraq, to go to war.
Yeah.
John Kerry voted for that. He has been unwilling to say that that was a mistaken vote. Should he say that he was wrong in voting for that resolution?
I would only say that if I had voted for the resolution, I could say for myself, I was misled. And I'm sorry.
Senator Robert Byrd, his new book is Losing America, Confronting a Reckless and Arrogant Presidency. Senator Byrd, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Bless your heart. Thank you for asking those questions. Keep on doing what you're doing.
Senator Robert Byrd, Democrat of West Virginia. You joined me here at the Democratic National Convention. We are following all the convention action this hour and talking about the war in Iraq and the Democratic Party. Do you know John Kerry's plan for Iraq? Will it work? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I am joined right now here in the convention hall by Peter Kanellis, a reporter for the Boston Globe, who's written extensively about the issue of Iraq and the delegates and John Kerry. Peter Kanellis, great to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
Peter, take us into this from two angles. The Democrats in Iraq on going in, on how we got into Iraq, and what delegates are thinking about that right now, and delegates and the Democratic Party on getting out. You've written there's a kind of a gap between the delegates, at least, in this hall and the man they're nominating to run for president, John Kerry.
I think there is a gap in that the delegates tend to be Democratic Party activists, and the Globe's poll of delegates showed that 95% feel like it was a mistake to have gone into Iraq in the first place. 80% of them said they were opposed to it right from the start, a point when John Kerry was not opposed to it. I think that the delegates very much want to see a rock'em sock'em speech from John Kerry pointing out all the flaws of the Bush administration. But I'm not sure that the audience at home, particularly undecided voters, is going to be swayed by that.
What's the Kerry camp's thinking then about how they need to handle the Iraq issue at this convention in Kerry's speeches to the American public?
Well, I think the Kerry campaign is focused on the voters at home, particularly the 10% in the middle who are undecided, more than they're focused on the delegates in the convention hall. I think they
and how are they reading that 10%? What do they think it wants to hear about Iraq?
I think the 10% wants to, is willing to accept the idea that a lot of what happened in Iraq has been a mistake. They're also willing to accept the idea that a lot of it has been the product of negligence on the part of the Bush administration. But before switching to John Kerry, they want to know that they'll have a president who will be vigilant about fighting terrorism and who isn't opposed to the Bush administration out of sort of an old-fashioned kind of liberal critique of the use of force and preference for sort of legalistic solutions over strong advocacy for the United States.
Peter, your poll also looked at delegate attitudes about how or how soon they would like U.S. troops out of Iraq. What did you find there?
It was a mixed bag. There were substantial numbers, let's say like 20%, that wanted them to come out immediately. There was another percentage that was similar to that. I'm sort of winging it here. I don't remember the exact percentages, but there was also a substantial percentage that felt that they should come back within a year. There were others who believed, 2 to 5 years, and then there was a group, maybe 20 or 30%, who said we should stay as long as it takes.
As I recall, it was 63% who said U.S. troops should be out within 2 years, if I recall your poll correctly.
63% were within 2 years. Okay.
63%. How does that compare with what John Kerry says about the U.S. presence, the U.S. role in Iraq going forward?
John Kerry says and has consistently said that he feels that it is absolutely crucial that the United States stay until there is a stable government in Iraq, and he won't put a timetable on it.
And as he suggested, what that might mean in terms of time?
I think he's purposely not, because he wants to also leave open the possibility that things could happen much more quickly than some are predicting. He tries to paint an optimistic picture that when he becomes president, he'll be so persuasive that other nations who have been resistant to the Bush administration's pleas will become involved and send troops, which will relieve the burden on U.S. troops, and that withdrawal can begin fairly quickly.
Jack Beatty, On Point News analyst, is with us. Jack, you heard Robert Byrd there. He's been a staunch opponent of this war from the get-go. John Kerry was not exactly so clear on that. Now he's saying we're going to rally the world and we will change things here. But the Democrats have an internal conversation going on that's not exactly harmonious.
That's certainly true. And Peter's article Monday really, I think, was an eye-opener in that regard. This is not a united convention in respect to the war in Iraq. But, the Kerry solution how to put it politely, moonshine. It's moonshine to suppose that by having a man in the White House named John Kerry, the French are going to say, by God, we want to get into Iraq and have our guys blown up just like your guys. And the Germans are going to say, let us go and have our guys blown up too. That is magical thinking, and I think Kerry's got to do a lot better than say, change the president, and the Europeans will just say, oh, let us go in there. We want to die too.
Jack Beatty, Peter Kanellis, stand by. We are broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention tonight and talking about the Democrats and Iraq. You can join the conversation. Do you understand John Kerry's plan for Iraq? Will it work? We're at 1-800-423-8255.
800-259-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're broadcasting live again tonight from the Democratic National Convention in Boston. And we are talking tonight about the Democrats and Iraq, where they stand and what they'll do. You can join this conversation. Do you agree with 95% of the delegates, as polled here, who say America should never have gone to war in Iraq? Or with John Kerry, who simply says he wouldn't have done it the way George Bush did it? Has this convention been tough enough on the Bush administration's failures in Iraq, or is it pulling punches to keep swing voters in the fold? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Got a lot of speakers coming to the podium tonight. We'll keep an eye on them as they do. Al Sharpton will be stepping up shortly, and we'll turn to him when he does. But for right now, we've been joined tonight by Peter Kanellis, reporter for the Boston Globe, who's with us. And with us at the Democratic National Convention, Susan Rice, senior foreign policy advisor to the Kerry campaign, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington. She was assistant secretary of state for African affairs under the Clinton administration. Great to have you with us, Susan Rice.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be here. Just want to clarify, I'm not at the Brookings Institution at the moment. I'm on leave from the...
Forgive me. On leave, but formally associated with.
Absolutely.
Susan Rice, you are very close to this campaign's foreign policy planning. How would you describe concisely for us here John Kerry's plan for Iraq? We know George Bush took us into this war. John Kerry, you could say, had some hand in that. We know what his vote was there, but he says he would have done it differently. How would he get the country out of Iraq?
Well, John Kerry understands that despite the messed up way we got into this war, it would be a very dangerous course for us to take to withdraw precipitously. The worst-case scenario for the United States from a security point of view is for Iraq to become a failed state, and that's a very serious prospect. If the United States withdraws, there's no security forces trained and equipped in Iraq to take over responsibility for securing the country. If there's no democratic process underway, then we face the very real threat of a serious new Afghanistan in the heart of the Middle East in one of the most strategic territories. Terrorists are coming in. They're setting up shop. You can argue that's one of the failings of the Bush administration's policy. But the challenge now is to prevent the worst-case scenario from unfolding in Iraq. How to do it?
Our news analyst Jack Beatty says it's moonshine to suggest that John Kerry, simply by being John Kerry, can bring the world to our side and solve this problem. What do you say?
I think that's an oversimplification of what John Kerry's saying. He's not saying that, you know, come January 20th, he'll wave a magic wand and everything will be wonderful. I think he understands very clearly that we're in a serious, difficult situation in Iraq. There are no easy fixes. From this day forth, if John Kerry were president, he would understand that it's absolutely critical that the elections that are to be held in January of next year be held in an atmosphere of security and an atmosphere that allows the people of Iraq to begin down the path towards democracy. There'll be another set of elections coming at the end of 2005. And if those aren't credible, legitimate elections like the previous elections, we're sunk. We have no exit strategy. George Bush thought he could get away with changing the channel on June 28th. The American public would turn off and stop looking at Iraq. They'd forget the fact that more Americans have been killed in Iraq in July than in the previous month in the run-up to the very dangerous handover. We've lost more than 50 servicemen and women this month, and it's not over.
But how would John Kerry do that? George Bush has already said, well, I'm going to turn to the UN a little bit more, to NATO a little bit more.
George Bush has said a lot of things, but he hasn't done it. Let me give you a good example. George Bush said he would turn it to the UN to help prepare for elections. Well, that's all well and good, but the resolution that authorized the UN involvement in elections also specified that there needs to be a protection force for the UN. The UN had a terrible tragedy over a year ago.
Last summer, the big explosion, so many dead.
Right now, no country has stepped up to the plate and said, we'll provide that brigade-sized protection force. Well, without it, there's not going to be any UN involvement in Iraq. There's not going to be any UN effort to set up this election, and therefore, there's not going to be a credible election. Without that credible election, we're up a big creek. John Kerry understands that if he were president today, one of our top priorities in Iraq would be to use our diplomatic influence to get our friends and partners around the world to commit the 3,000 troops as necessary to protect the UN. George Bush is sleeping on the job. What is being done to do that?
Susan Rice, senior foreign policy advisor for the Kerry campaign. It's great to have you. We want to hear more on exactly this line. But right now, the Reverend Al Sharpton is at the podium on the convention floor. Let's turn to him. Al Sharpton.
John Kerry, the president of the United States. I stood with both John Kerry and John Edwards over 30 occasions in debates during the primary season. I not only debated them, I watched them. I observed their deeds. I looked into their eyes. I am convinced that they are men who say what they mean and mean what they say. I am also convinced that at a time when a vicious spirit in the body politic of this country that attempts to undermine America's freedoms, our civil rights, our civil liberties, we must leave this city and go forth and organize this nation for victory for our party and John Kerry and John Edwards in November. But let me quickly say, this is not just about winning an election. It's about preserving the principles on which this very nation was founded. Look at the current view of our nation worldwide as a result of our unilateral foreign policy. We went from unprecedented international support and solidarity on September 12, 2001, to hostility and hatred as we stand here tonight. We can't survive in the world by ourselves. How did we squander this opportunity to unite the world for democracy and to commit to the global fight against hunger and disease? We did it with a go-it-alone foreign policy based on flawed intelligence. We were told that we were going to Iraq because there were weapons of mass destruction. We lost hundreds of soldiers. We spent $200 billion at a time we had record state deficits. And when it became clear that there were no weapons, they changed the premise for the war and said, no, we went because of other reasons. If I told you tonight to let's leave the fleet center, we're in danger. And when you get outside, you ask me, Reverend Al, what is the danger? And I say, it don't matter. We just needed some fresh air. I have misled you, and we were misled. We are also faced with the prospect of, in the next 4 years, that two or more Supreme Court justices' seats will become available. This year, we celebrated the anniversary of Brown versus the Board of Education. This court has voted 5-4 on critical issues of women's rights and civil rights. It is frightening to think that the gains of civil and women's rights and those movements in the last century could be reversed if this administration is in the White House in these next 4 years. I suggest to you tonight that if George Bush had selected the court in 54, Clarence Thomas would have never got to law school.
Al Sharpton having some fun at the podium and the audience responding wholeheartedly right there.
This is not about a party. This is about living up to the promise of America. The promise of America says we will guarantee quality education for all children and not spend more money on metal detectors than computers in our schools. The promise of America guarantees health care for all of its citizens and doesn't force seniors to travel to Canada to buy prescription drugs they can't afford here at home. The promise of America provides that those who work in our health care system can afford to be hospitalized in the very beds they clean up every day. The promise of America is that government does not seek to regulate your behavior in the bedroom, but to guarantee your right to provide food in the kitchen. The issue of government is not to determine who may sleep together in the bedroom. It's to help those that might not be eating in the kitchen. The promise of America is that we stand for human rights, whether it's fighting against slavery in the Sudan, where right now Joe Madison and others are fasting around what is going on in Sudan. AIDS in Lesotho, or police misconduct in this country. The promise of America is one immigration policy for all who seek to enter our shores. Whether they come from Mexico, Haiti, or Canada, there must be one set of rules for everybody. We cannot welcome those to come and then try and act as though any culture will not be respected or treated inferior. We cannot look at the Latino community and preach one language. No one gave them an English test before they sent them to Iraq to fight for America. The promise of America is that every citizen's vote is counted and protected, and election schemes do not decide the election. It, to me, is a glaring contradiction that we would fight, and rightfully so, to get the right to vote for the people in the capital of Iraq in Baghdad, but still don't give the federal right to vote for the people in the capital of the United States in Washington, D.C. Mr. President, as I close, Mr. President, I heard you say Friday that you had questions for voters, particularly African-American voters. And you asked the question, did the Democratic Party take us for granted? Well, I have raised questions, but let me answer your question. You said the Republican Party was the party of Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. It is true that Mr. Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, after which there was a commitment to give 40 acres and a mule. That's where the argument to this day of reparations started. We never got the 40 acres. We went all the way to Herbert Hoover, and we never got the 40 acres. We didn't get the mule. So we decided we'd ride this donkey as far as it would take us.
The Reverend Al Sharpton with the hall on its feet again. He's nearly at the end here. He's going to go on and give a tribute to Ray Charles and America the Beautiful. But he is winding up this crowd. I'm joined here just at the edge of the hall by Peter Kanellis of the Boston Globe and Susan Rice, John Kerry, Senior Foreign Policy Advisor. Susan Rice, we've got to step out of our Iraq conversation just for a moment. You're an African-American woman watching Al Sharpton speak to the big convention tonight. Of course, he didn't win the nomination or won't have won it at the end of this week. But what do you think he stood for in this whole campaign season?
Well, I think Al Sharpton has done what John Kerry says is so important, speaking truth to power. And whether you agree with Al Sharpton's views on everything, and I frankly don't, I do admire very much his stand, his bravery, and his willingness to say what he thinks. And he's done that here again tonight very effectively. He's pointed out that even though the Democratic Party and African Americans don't have an absolutely perfect relationship, there is no question that for good reason, the vast majority of African Americans find their home in the Democratic Party because this party stands for affirmative action. It stands for economic opportunity. It stands for health care and education for every American. And these are very fundamental things that we're committed to and that are bedrock issues for the Democrats.
We didn't get the mule, said Al Sharpton. We are going to ride this donkey.
Great
and you
line.
Clap for that. All right, we've got you for exactly 2 minutes more. You have John Kerry's ear. You're looking at Iraq. Please tell us John Kerry's exit strategy.
Well, John Kerry's exit strategy is an American exit strategy, and it recognizes that we have to accomplish this mission. We have to have credible, legitimate elections to get out in success.
Be more
concrete.
How do you make that happen?
You have to get the UN in there with a protection force to organize the elections. You have to use our forces on the ground to provide greater security, not just to hunker down in the barracks. You've got to get the Iraqi security forces, police and military, trained on an expeditious basis. All of these are critical.
George Bush wants to do that, too.
He's not
What's
doing
the difference?
It. He's not doing it.
But he knows he's got to do it to get out of there.
Look, wait a minute. It's very important to understand that it's one thing for George Bush, more than a year after he ended the war in Iraq, to talk about doing these things. He's finally gotten the right script, but he hasn't gotten the right set of actions. He's not doing anything that anybody can see to accelerate preparations for elections, create a sufficiently secure environment, get the UN in there to do the job.
Why not?
These
he
are
wants
implementation
out of there too.
Challenges. I'll let you ask the Bush administration why not. The American people need the U.S. government to stay on the job in Iraq, to push for security, to get the UN in there so they can hold credible elections, to create a secure environment so Iraqis can campaign, form parties, and begin the democratic process. Iraqis are terrorized today.
And just
the security
more
situation.
Effort from the United States can do that?
More effort, more concentration. It's been incredible. If you look at the slow pace, for example, of training up Iraqi police and security forces, this is a no-brainer.
But aren't U.S. troops working hard already to make these things happen?
They are starting to work hard, but they've wasted more than 15 months. They have not made this job won. General Petraeus is now back in there. He will work hard on this, but it hasn't been the top priority it should be.
Susan Rice, it's been great having you tonight. Susan Rice is Senior Foreign Policy Advisor to the Kerry campaign. Thank you very much for being
with
us.
Thank you very much.
We are talking tonight, and we'll be talking very shortly with Congressman Henry Waxman from California about the Democrats and Iraq, where they stand, what they'll do. You can join our conversation tonight. Do you understand John Kerry's plan for Iraq? Will it work? How difficult is it now? How different is it, I should say, from George Bush's plan? We're 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're broadcasting live tonight from the Democratic National Convention and talking about the Democrats and Iraq, where they stand, what they will do. A Boston Globe poll out this week showed that 63% of the delegates at the convention think the United States should pull its soldiers out of Iraq in 2 years or less. Moments ago, I spoke with one of those delegates, William Jenkins, from Port St. Lucie, Florida, with Florida's 16th Congressional District. I asked him when he thinks the United States should pull out of Iraq.
I think we should begin withdrawing now.
Now, period.
I'm at least making plans to set a date certain to leave immediately that allows for an orderly withdrawal, an orderly transition to a multilateral force, and that allows the Iraqis time to adjust.
When would you like to see the last U.S. soldier leave Iraq?
Within 90 days of announcing the date, and I think the date can be announced within a month of a new president taking office.
So we're talking very soon after what you're clearly hoping would be the inauguration of a Democratic president. Do you think John Kerry's prepared to do that? He's indicated that he might need years to get the United States out of Iraq.
John Kerry and I disagree on that, and I think that he's wrong in that position. I think that we are kidding ourselves if we think that we can somehow fix what we have broken by remaining in there. As Walt Kelly's pogo said, we have met the enemy and they is us.
A lot of delegates at this convention share your view from poll numbers that we've seen. If John Kerry gets in the White House and turns around to look at his Democratic base on Iraq, are they going to be saying, no, we don't want to stay the course, we want out now?
Yes, I mean, this is America. We're allowed to dissent both from the opposition party, if they happen to be in power, or from our own leaders, and I'm certainly prepared to be in the streets doing that dissent. I will work like a big dog to get John Kerry elected, and I will work like a big dog to persuade him that following a Vietnam-like policy is the wrong thing to do, and he, among all people, should know that.
William Jenkins, thanks for joining us.
You're quite welcome.
Delegate William Jenkins from Port St. Lucie, Florida. I'm joined now by Congressman Henry Waxman, Democrat of California, ranking minority member of the Committee on Government Reform. He's been a big critic, was a big critic of going into Iraq, been a big critic of how that war and American occupation have been executed. And Congressman Waxman, thanks for being with us tonight.
I'm delighted to be with you. Thank
you. And there you heard the delegate straight off the convention floor saying, we want out now. What is a reasonable view for the Democratic Party of how things ought to proceed in Iraq, how they will proceed if John Kerry wins the White House?
Well, the first thing we have to recognize is we shouldn't have been in there. And secondly, the Bush administration is incapable of pulling together an international effort that will help Iraq get stabilized again. Because President Bush has lost credibility all around the world. The UN and our allies are going to give lip service, but they're pretty much going to take the position. The U.S. went in unilaterally, didn't care what anybody else had to say. Now let the U.S. figure out what to do next. I can't give you a time frame for when we need to leave. The sooner, the better. But we do have an obligation to try to help Iraq get stabilized. I don't think that it's likely we're going to see a democratic Iraq. I think that would be wonderful, but I think it's unlikely that democracy is going to be introduced to a country that's never had any experience with it so quickly. At best, they'll hold an election. The Shiites have the majority. It'll be a Shiite government. And a Shiite government hopefully will work out its ability to work with minorities like the Sunnis and the Kurds. But the Shiites are going to be close to Iraq, to Iran in many ways. They're going to be close to Hezbollah, which is a terrorist organization. And yet we're going to have to hope that they can run their own affairs as quickly as possible.
Congressman Waxman, can you see a President John Kerry turning to the American people, to the Iraqis, to the Middle East, and saying it was too much to hope for democracy in Iraq, we're going to aim for stability and then leave?
I don't think that would be his message. I think the message would be we're going to try to help Iraq find some kind of democracy and give people the ability to select their own government. That has to be our objective. Now, I'm skeptical whether we're going to achieve that objective in the way we know it in the United States. I think it's going to be much more an election. It may be one man, one vote, one time. But if we, because the essence of democracy is not just a vote. The essence is to respect minority rights. And that's something that's very hard to do in places where they have never quite been willing to recognize minorities should be looked at as part of the society and not just those we allow to live among us at our sufferance.
John Kerry has not been prepared to say, as Robert Byrd suggested earlier in this hour, that perhaps he should, as Robert Byrd said, I would. He's not been prepared to say that he was wrong in voting for the resolution that ultimately empowered President Bush to take the country to war. What's your position on that? Should he say he was wrong? Is that just yesterday's news and we should forget about it and move on? How do you see it, Henry Waxman?
I think that you have to recognize when the vote was taken, most experts, even those from the Clinton administration, were telling us that weapons of mass destruction and likely nuclear weapons were going to be in the hands of Saddam Hussein. And there was a sense that we had to do something, not wait until, as so effectively the Bush administration put it for propaganda purposes, we wait till the smoking gun is a nuclear cloud.
A mushroom cloud.
And that had an enormous impact on the Congress and the American people. It turned out to be based on faulty intelligence and manipulation, misleading and false statements by Bush and his people. So I don't fault Senator Kennedy for reaching the conclusion he did, given the facts
Senator
he knew
Kerry
it.
In this case.
Senator Kerry.
I've done the same.
But not. And the other part of it was that the vote at that time in the Congress was before the UN acted. And a lot of people wanted to send a message to the UN that the U.S. was wanted to do something, and we wanted the UN to act. So I think he was thinking, as many others were, that to get the UN to act, let's get a strong vote in the Congress. So you can fault him for what we know now, not what he knew then. And that's sort of what difference does it make at this point. It's a question of, we know enough not to trust President Bush and his team. We've got to get rid of them. They brought us into this war as a war of choice, not a war of necessity. They used a doctrine that is an extremely dangerous unilateral and preventive action when Iraq was not an imminent threat. It's a terrible thing that they've done to our country, and the world has looked at us with a sense that they're disappointed at best, and our standing as a moral beacon has really fallen very far.
Congressman Henry Waxman, Peter Kanellis of the Boston Globe. I want to turn to our callers. Brian is calling from New York City. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Hi there. How are you?
Just great. What's on your mind, Brian?
Well, first of all, I wanted to take exception to something that you said earlier and that the press frequently says. The press frequently says that John Kerry voted for the war. He didn't vote for the war. He voted to give President Bush the power to handle the crisis as needed.
Well, and I've tried to be careful on that and say he voted for the resolution that ultimately empowered President Bush to go to war. But your point taken. And what about today, Brian?
Today, I think John Kerry's plan for handling Iraq makes perfect sense. To ask for John Kerry to come up with a detailed roadmap for how the United States is going to fix Iraq at this point is just unrealistic. First of all, if you come up with a detailed roadmap, all you're doing is letting the other side know what you're going to do so they can counteract it.
Brian, you've been listening. How would you describe, as a citizen out in the land, how would you describe John Kerry's plan? How do you understand it? What is it?
I understand his plan to be that we're going to bring in the United Nations, we're going to stabilize the situation by providing security, and once you provide the security, then you can move on to establishing democratic institutions and reconstructing the country. Now, I know that sounds similar to what Bush is saying, but Bush has come to this point late. And the key thing to remember here is, even if that is what Bush wants to do now, he can't, because he doesn't have the credibility to do it. John Kerry would have the credibility.
Brian, we've got it. We appreciate your points, both of them. Thanks for calling in from New York. Peter Kanellis, you hear the thought from the caller. I'm sure it's on many people's minds. Your response?
I think that a lot of these points about what would be different about a Kerry administration really boil down to the extent that having a new president and having a President Kerry will really motivate allies, not fringe allies, but key Western European allies with large armies, to join the fight in Iraq or the effort to stabilize Iraq. And to me, it's sort of an underreported and underexplored question of whether these countries are opposed to this mission so firmly that they won't budge, or whether they're just alienated by the Bush administration and would be receptive to a different kind of plea. And it's something that we as reporters have to really probe. It's something we have to really question candidates on. And I'd be interested in Congressman Waxman's perspective on that.
I want to get that in just a moment, Congressman. But if we could, for just a second, nip down to the convention floor where Senator Bob Graham is at the podium. Let's hear just a little bit of what he has to say.
And Al-Qaeda that attacked us. And that is why John Kerry and John Edwards will not only win the peace in Iraq, but they will carry the fight in the war on terror wherever it needs to be fought, whether it's the palaces of the Middle East or the banks of Europe or the seaports of Florida or the firehouses of Boston. John Kerry recognizes that victory in the war on terror will require all the resources of the United States of America. Diplomatic, economic, intelligence, and military. Today, my friends, recruiting billboards for Al-Qaeda are being erected on the main streets of the major cities of the Middle East. We need to work with our allies. We need to work with like-minded people in the Islamic world to tear down those recruiting billboards and to clean the swamp of terror.
Florida Senator Bob Graham, who stood up, one of the many contenders with John Kerry for nomination. Henry Waxman, here it is again, the call for allies. You heard it from our caller as well. Speak to us about allies for a minute. A, in a Kerry presidency, will they come? Will they come back to the United States side? And B, will they make a difference? Do they really have the resources to make a difference?
I think the United States has a reservoir of goodwill around the world, and the reaction we've seen from countries that have been close allies of ours, some before World War II and many afterwards, that can be brought back together with a new president. I think it was anti-Bush the way he has treated these allies in the past, and we need to renegotiate with them.
But if the U.S. military can't do it, why can the U.S. succeed in Iraq with the much smaller militaries at its side from Europe, let's say?
Well, I think it's not just a question of the military. The military, U.S. military, did the job of winning a war, so to speak. But what we need now is to stabilize the country and try to bring in a government that can have the respect of its own people as a legitimate government. And that's our goal. And that should be the goal also of other countries that have been our allies, from even the French and the Germans should want that goal. And they want to work with us to stop terrorism, because it's as much a threat to Europeans as it is to Americans and others around the world.
And that, in a word that's popular these days, might give John Kerry some leverage. They need stability there ultimately as well. Henry Waxman, it's been terrific having you. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Henry Waxman, Democratic Congressman from California, and Peter Kanellis with the Boston Globe. Terrific reporting you've done on this issue, and thank you so much for being with us tonight. Jack Beattie, On Point News analyst, is with us. Jack, you've been watching the convention this evening, hearing these conversations. John Kerry, big, big, difficult task that would be left him by the Bush administration if and when he would become U.S. president. How does it sound to you?
Well, you know how it sounds to me? It sounds to me, I'm put in mind of John F. Kennedy's last interview. This was with Chet Huntley in September of 1963. The subject was Vietnam and elections in Vietnam and the future in Vietnam. And John Kennedy said, in the final analysis, it's their war. In the final analysis, it's their country. And Rami Khoury, the Arab intellectual, recently wrote a piece and said, you know, it applied a kind of welfare theory to what we're doing there, that the longer we stay, the more we palsy the national will in Iraq to fight for their own country. And he thinks there's a point, and that we're going to reach it soon, where our presence, even on that level alone, we'll do it for you. Sit back. We got plenty of kids in Kansas who are ready to die. You know, that's not what the American public wants. And we've just heard tonight from John Kerry's people that they're talking about, well, we've got the election in 2005, and we're looking ahead. You know, in the final analysis, it's their country.
So I'm hearing from Jack Beattie tonight, the end of the American occupation as we've known it.
Well, as soon as possible, and not one of these open-ended commitments.
ASAP. John Edwards on tonight, John Kerry on tomorrow night. We'll be there. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.